Good evening, my friends. Good evening and welcome. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Very excited to have you with us here tonight, as always. It's Wednesday, June 6, 2007, 11 p.m. here in the Central Time Zone. Remember a year ago, everybody freaking out about 6606? End of the world and all that. I guess I missed it. The world still seems to be in place as of right now, although it is rapidly falling apart. So you can use whatever sort of gauge you'd like to be aware of things. As long as you're aware, I guess that's the important thing. Big things happening out there in the world on many different levels, and we've started down some roads. Last night we began talking about the various debates, Democrats, Republicans, and all that jazz. Obviously, there's more. There's significantly more to discuss in the realm of politics. We'll be doing so this week for the most part, and in addition, of course, to bring you fun and exciting guests. Weather-related stuff, you may have seen the cyclone over there in the Middle East, be the equivalent of a hurricane, I suppose you could say. That's causing some havoc in the oil industry. So it begs the question, again, about the oil manipulation, the prices, and how that translates to us, and then, again, in terms of gasoline as well. And I just caught the headline there at Drudge Report that in L.A. they're being encouraged not to use water so much, take less showers. So very interesting as we get into this time. And I'd mentioned this to you, that this is a very important time in the realm of politics. Now, as they try to finagle this immigration bill forward, which I think that there's a test vote of sorts that's going to be taking place tomorrow, very important to watch out for that and see how that develops, because it's possible that they might just scrap this whole thing, although I think it's more likely that what they'll do is they'll wait till more pressing issues are occupying people's minds, such as, of course, hurricane season, which has already begun about 6 days ago. So hurricane season, how is that going to affect us? A lot of different ways, obviously, a lot of storm activity, some places in drought conditions, and will continue probably on in drought conditions. Obviously, getting a little warmer, people are going to be consuming more electricity as they try to cool their homesteads and various things like that. And of course, running the air conditioner in the car, driving around, then you've got more gasoline consumption, and it just goes on and on and on. So think about that in terms of economic terms. Think about that in terms of global warming terms. Think about that in terms of natural disasters. And again, hurricanes equals tragedy. Tragedy equals, you know, price gouging and all sorts of other things. It also equals people needing help from the federal government in the form of National Guard, which aren't available because they're in Iraq, and so on and so forth. So, again, all it's going to take is one issue. And it could be, you know, again, some sort of combination of heat wave, hurricane, whatever, something like that. And everyone's going to forget about the immigration thing. So I think it's more likely that it's just going to be postponed a little while. But I think that they will try to force it through. And I don't think it'll be implemented for a while, because I think, again, the contentiousness of this issue, a lot of Americans are paying attention to this, and I like that. And a lot of Americans are pretty adamant on how they feel about it. There's not a whole lot of on the fence about the immigration reform. So I think it's more likely that this thing will wait probably maybe until we have a new president who will implement this thing. And as a result of that, then you've got an incredible voter base to acquiesce to whatever it is that the president wants to do, such as, hey, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do these microchip implants or something like that, or microchip identification cards. And if you guys want to be in this country, you better go ahead and sign on the line. Well, there you go. Then you got 25 million people, and they're already on board with this. So that's a big chunk of the population, obviously. And it's very easy to sort of roll that into other areas of concern. It just goes on and on and on. But we're going to be discussing economic piracy with our guests tonight, and I'm looking forward to chatting with them. We should have them with us when we come back after this short break. Stay with us, folks. More Frankly Speaking Radio coming back in 3 minutes.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products. also made with Himalayan salt, I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SolayWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the task force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Welcome. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I just completely almost fell out of my chair here. Yes, you're listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I'm your host, Frank Whalen. Glad you're here with us. Of course, welcome to all of you listening on AM and FM frequencies around the country, around the world, and, of course, online at the only officially sanctioned website of the network, that is www.republicbroadcasting.org. Fantastic stuff, and I want to, of course, remind you about our phone number, 800-313-9443. Our two guests have joined us before on the show. They are just devastatingly informative and really just phenomenal. They are the authors of the book, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, an examination of epistemic autocracy from the 19th to the 21st century. And we've had them on the show before, and we're going to talk about something a little bit different, but definitely a part of the puzzle, and these guys have it. Please welcome to the program Paul and Philip Collins. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you so much for having us, Frank.
It's a great honor to have you back. You guys certainly shook everybody up. Everybody's very, very excited when you guys were here together, and I know they're going to be equally excited this evening. Now, we've talked about many things, of course, looking at the world systems and the way everything is set up, the whole New World Order concept and the paradigm and the way these things are implemented over time. One of the things that is addressed in such a phenomenal way is in your new piece, which I would encourage people to go. Here's where you can find it on the web. It's www.conspiracyarchive.com. In the commentary section, just look up Paul Collins, Philip Collins, and the article headline here is Institutions of Economic Piracy. In order to have these operations that span, you know, generations and generations and generations, hundreds of years, thousands of years, all working towards a single solitary goal, the number one thing that moves and shakes like nothing else is money. You got to have money, and this article, I think, really gives an amazing look at the history of the whole shenanigans behind finances, and also takes us right back to where we are now. It's a phenomenal piece. What led you guys down this avenue yourselves?
Well, basically, we started to look into this and to look into doing something over the economic side of what the global oligarchical establishment is doing. When we saw back in April of this year, the World Bank representative Eduardo Salmansado being instructed to leave Ecuador. He was basically given his walking papers, his rejection slip, and the Ecuador's president, Rafael Correa, announced on April 21st that he didn't want the World Bank to be there. He said that they were basically punishing Ecuador as a sovereign nation for modifying its own national laws, and he put it quite bluntly. He said, "We're not going to be anybody's colony."
Yeah,
and that took us back a few steps that he would say something like that.
And it's
and then
words, and
you follow this up with what Hugo Chavez has been doing in Venezuela, where he says that he's going to formally pull them out of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund. And now, both of these individuals, we make no excuses for them. We don't see them as some kind of great populist leader of the people. They've aligned themselves with individuals like Hu Jintao in China. They've aligned themselves with another faction of the elite. And all that we have really going on here is competition between two rival models for world order. Still in all, however, that being said, the decision on Correa's part and Chavez to pull what we refer to as the Great South American Defection and all it seems to have been well founded. If you look at Correa's remarks concerning Ecuador being changed into a colony by the World Bank, that really underscores the whole feudal character of this of the emergent world government and this whole colonial model of one world order that the Western elite are basically erecting today. Goes all the way back to bankers in Antwerp and to the kings and queens of Europe, and goes back a lot farther than one might expect.
Yeah, Correa's remarks concerning the World Bank's colonial approach to Ecuador's economy, again, that underscores the feudal character of the emergent world government. And this colonial model, which is being ushered in by the transnationalist system of globalism, actually originated back during the 1300s with the East India Company. The East India Company was composed of several organizations that were formed by bankers and European nobility. So they represented the monopolistic interest of oligarchs. Their intended function was the consolidation of resources, of wealth, and of land on behalf of the ruling class. Now, at the time, thanks to nautical innovations and other cultural advancements that had taken place during the Middle Ages, it was discovered that the Earth possessed a spherical shape. Everybody knew by then that the Earth was round. Well, logically, this revelation led to the conclusion that Earth possessed a finite surface area. And finite surface area in the minds of the oligarchs meant finite resources, finite wealth, and finite land. And naturally, the nobility of Europe and other oligarchs of the time felt that it was their divine right to exclusive ownership of these assets. And so we have the politics of scarcity emerging, a situation where an eschatology premised upon finitude acts as the rationale for the political and social hegemony of a few.
This is where sustainable development is going to, that whole concept is going to evolve from that.
Yes, radical environmentalism, the concepts of population control, the concepts of carrying capacity, all originated here, really, at this time with this paradigm. And this paradigm is inherently technocratic because it bestows absolute authority upon experts. After all, the regulation of finite resources stipulates the specialized knowledge of so-called policy professionals. And typically, such policy professionals are aligned with the ruling elite, providing technical and scientific sanction for elite initiatives. They basically determine what constitutes scientific proof, what constitutes evidence for the allocation of resources, for the questions of governance. It's what Paul and I refer to in The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship as an epistemological cartel, epistemology dealing with what's constitutive of knowledge. It's a derivative of the Greek word episteme, which means knowing. And, of course, science, which is a derivative of the Latin root word scientia, also means knowing or knowledge. And so those who deal in science and those who determine arbitrate on the what constitutes the dominant scientific paradigms basically arbitrate on what's constitutive of knowledge. And at the time, the individuals who were shaping knowledge and shaping what was constitutive of knowledge, shaping what was basically going to be given epistemological primacy, were individuals such as Thomas Malthus. Now, Thomas Malthus was a demographer who acted as a retainer for the British East India Company. And Thomas Malthus basically authored the essay on the principle of population, which was a treatise that was premised upon the thesis that population that was unchecked, population that was allowed to grow without restraint, basically increased at a geometrical ratio. And meanwhile, subsistence, subsistence production, for instance, crops and infrastructural development, things that help sustain populations, only increased at an arithmetic ratio. Now, this is vintage scientism. Basically, demographic theory basically attempts to take very complex and labyrinthine machinations of the natural order and reduce them to simplistic mathematical equations. And that is vintage scientism. Mm-hmm. Scientism, of course, is basically the belief that the investigational methods of physical science should be imposed upon all fields of inquiry.
Science is the sole repository of truth.
Yes, and that includes questions of governance, questions of ethics and morality. And the problem with that belief system, the modern mind, chronocentric as it is, might find such an imposition favorable that science can answer all our questions. But the problem is that science, being a system of quantification, can concern itself only with quantifiable entities. And so, as is evidenced by Malthus's theories, it basically reduces complex questions, such as questions of population, subsistence production, and what have you, to overly simplistic mathematical equations, makes it a numbers game. Mm-hmm. And so the human creature, complex as he or she is, all of a sudden becomes just another number. Mm-hmm. And that's precisely what Malthus did with his theories of population.
Let me jump in here. I'm sorry, gentlemen. Folks, we'll be back here in 3 minutes with our special guests, Philip Collins and Paul Collins, and, of course, more Frankly Speaking Radio. Stay with us. Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Attention gardeners! If you've ever wanted to grow the absolute best tasting fruits and vegetables imaginable, well, here's exciting news. There's a new product called ProtoGrow, and it's dynamite in the garden. ProtoGrow is a bioactive superfood for plants. It works by providing true broad spectrum nutrition, allowing plants to achieve their full genetic expression. So what does this mean in the garden? It means mouth-watering fruits and vegetables, brilliantly colored flowers, herbs that finally grow to medicinal strength, blue ribbon garden produce jam-packed with bioavailable minerals and trace elements, giant pumpkins, even high-potency Hybrix wheatgrass. ProtoGrow is a proprietary blend of full-spectrum nutrients from the sea. It literally contains the basic building blocks of life itself. In fact, ProtoGrow is so effective at producing rapid plant growth in record time that it almost forces plants to grow even under the worst light and soil conditions. To grow tasty fruits and vegetables right now, go to growlikecrazy.com or call 877-327-0365.
Glad you're here. You are, of course, listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. Our special guests this evening, Philip and Paul Collins. They are the authors of the book, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, and we are speaking about their latest article. And when I say article, it would probably be more apropos to say mini book, because these are very lengthy articles. This one is about 15 pages in a printer-friendly format, but it's absolutely phenomenal. A must-read. It's entitled Institutions of Economic Piracy. You can go to conspiracyarchive.com and look in the commentary section. You'll be able to find it. It's phenomenal. Philip, Paul, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sorry for the interruption. We were talking about the scientism of the whole thing and looking at the population, guiding the population in a very emotionless way, as you said, like a numbers game.
Right, absolutely. And Thomas Malthus, his theory seemed quite impressive because he delineated it in some pretty impressive mathematical jargon. Many people to this very day, radical environmentalist Malthusians, neo-Malthusians,
population control proponents still view his theory and his demographic speculations as valid. However, they have been refuted time and time again. One such individual who just completely and totally demolished the Malthusian contentions concerning carrying capacity was the late economist Julian Simon in his outstanding book, The Ultimate Resource. Basically, what Malthus was trying to do was Malthus was basically brought on by the East India Company to basically inventory the human herd, so to speak, to take the global assets, food, resources, wealth, what have you, and quantify and place them into a cataloging system. But the truth of the matter is that Malthus could not estimate how much land was partially or even totally uncultivated at the time. It was virtually impossible for him to do so. He couldn't determine how much of the land was actually fertile. He couldn't determine how much food it could produce in tons per acre, and so on. Even those who preceded him were uncertain of this. So all of his thesis is really premised upon some very questionable speculation.
And he didn't make room for technological breakthroughs that would make it possible for the planet to carry actually more human population.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That was precisely the conclusion of Julian Simon. More people actually means more innovation, more technological growth, more infrastructural growth. And so it really lays to waste his demographic eschatological theories that unless population is kept in check, then population will eventually invariably exceed means of subsistence production. Nevertheless, his theories remain at the heart and core of many of the social sciences today, which is not very surprising at all, given the technocratic origins of the social sciences with Enlightenment thinkers like Auguste Comte and Henri de Saint-Simon, who were both proponents of technocracy, scientific dictatorships, what have you. They also remain at the core of most modern economics. Lord Keynes, for instance, his monetary policies, which governed a majority of the world since World War II, were premised upon a lot of Malthus's thesis, and Keynes himself considered Malthus a genius. So you can see where already we have this scarcity-based economics, which very much perpetuates a system of control for the elite, because the idea now is that only a handful of mature minds can actually determine the allocation of resources, actually determine the allocation of wealth, of land, and also basically you have a rationale there for some otherwise very morally questionable things such as infanticide, abortion, what have you, because after all, population must be kept in check.
Yes.
Or we're just going to starve to death.
Eugenical regimentation becomes a necessary evil in the very least.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting you bring that up, because when I was looking at this, and I've encountered the company, the East India Company, in quite a bit of research, and from what I understand, they were actively involved in the opium smuggling.
Absolutely.
And that actually led to the British basically colonizing Hong Kong.
Absolutely.
And so they could get the opium there into China. So what you've got here is a couple of situations where, like you said, population control, colonialization, and that really, which is when you talked about the IMF and the World Bank and the phrase, we're not going to be a colony, it ties it all together, and it really does make it a devastating argument. And we have to pause here. I apologize, gentlemen.
Sure,
we'll be back
no problem.
In 3 minutes, though, folks. So please don't go anywhere. More Frankly Speaking Radio with our special guests tonight, Paul and Philip Collins, when we come back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Folks, glad you're here. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. And, of course, I'd like to remind you this hour is being brought to you courtesy of the generosity of our good friends down at Howard Creek Resort. They have nine, count them nine, fully equipped individual housekeeping cabins and easy access to all the fun things as only Arkansas can offer you. However, they are very, very close to Branson, Missouri, and all the fun things that you can do there. If you've never been to Branson, it's, wow, it's busy. A lot of country music lovers love some Branson. But, you know, if you like the touristy thing, you like nonstop craziness, then Branson's for you. It's not like spring break thing or anything like that, but it's a nice family-oriented and very, very busy. However, Howard Creek Resort is located on Bull Shoals Lake here in Arkansas. Peace and quiet and the perfect family vacation spot any time of the year, no matter what it is you're trying to accomplish with your time together. So visit them on the web at www.howardcreek.com. Get all the information. Check it out. Call them. get some information, set some dates. Last time we had talked to them, they had 4th of July still wide open. So go ahead and reserve your cabin now, and you can call them toll-free at 877-253-7690. All right, we certainly appreciate them. Ask you to support all of our sponsors and advertisers, and take good care of our guests as well, because they make a lot of time for us at crazy hours, including our guests tonight, Philip and Paul Collins, authors of the book The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship. The website, conspiracyarchive.com, in the commentary section, look up their names. You'll find a whole slew of articles, including the one we're talking about right now, Institutions of Economic Piracy. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Thank you guys very much. I love talking to you. And, you know, when we left off, we were talking about the East India Trading Company really getting involved in the whole drug smuggling and how that leads to population control and a variety of other things as well, because these guys are really just... Well, the epitome of evil for the most part. And you can see how these institutions we have today, you know, bankers and whatnot, have evolved from those institutions of old.
Absolutely. Well, another theoretician who was basically influenced by Malthus's logic, and I put logic in quotes there, was none other than Charles Darwin. The principles of Malthus's essay form a vital part of Darwin's theory of evolution. And basically what Darwinism, with Darwinism, which we discuss at length in the book and have addressed in many articles, with Charles Darwin, what you have is it basically is a case where Miguel de Cervantes in Don Quixote wrote, "Tell me what company thou keepest, and I'll tell thee what thou art." And Darwinism affirmed this maxim. Charles Darwin was surrounded by elitist, racist, Freemasons, technocrats, all these sort of men that shaped his thinking and in turn his theories. Basically, Darwinism was an attempt to scientifically dignify this politically and socially expedient worldview for the elite. Basically, what Charles Darwin was doing was sculpting his theory according to the ideas of individuals like, for instance, T.H. Huxley, who acted as Charles Darwin's bulldog. T.H. Huxley was a vehement racist, a proponent for slavery, although Charles Darwin, oddly enough, was an opponent of slavery, although Charles Darwin really did consider black people inferior. Him and T.H. Huxley were actually at variance over the issue of slavery. But T.H. Huxley was very much pro-slavery. He was a Freemason, a fellow of the Masonic Royal Society, which acted as one of the chief promulgators of evolutionary theory. T.H. Huxley was also a member of an oligarchical dynasty out of which we would have individuals like Julian Huxley, who would be key in the formation of UNESCO, which would be part of the United Nations eugenical branch for eugenical regimentation on a global level. T.H. Huxley was also one of the individuals responsible for the formation of the Rhodes Roundtable groups, which would lead to the formation of the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which in turn would form a stateside branch here in the United States known as the Council on Foreign Relations, which acts as this country's chief foreign policy cartel. You also have Erasmus Darwin, who was Charles's grandfather, also Freemason, was a member of the Lunar Society, which was inherently technocratic in character because it basically promoted the idea of an elite few men determining what was constitutive of scientific truth. He was also a supporter, surprise, surprise, of the radical Jacobins, I've heard it pronounced both ways, in revolutionary France, which were led by individuals like Robespierre and Danton, which actually conducted a vicious depopulation campaign during the latter part of the French Revolution. Then there was Harriet Martineau, who was a frequent dinner guest of Charles Darwin, who was a positivist, a Comtean sociocrat, and also an apologist for the corporate interest of the Whigs, and also an advocate of eugenical regimentation, pushed for repeal of the Elizabethan poor laws so that the lower socioeconomic class of Britain could be kind of eugenically extirpated. And then, of course, there was Charles Darwin's friend Herbert Spencer, who was a theoretician of the technocratic social sciences and an advocate of Britain's genocidal colonial warfare. Now, all these individuals basically acted as kind of like conveyor belts for the ideas of the power elite, of the concepts of elitism, of technocracy, into Charles Darwin's thinking, and Charles Darwin would scientifically dignify them with his theories concerning biological progressive development or evolution. And out of evolutionary theory, you would have the concept of survival of the fittest or natural selection, which Ernest Haeckel, if I'm not mistaken, characterized as aristocratic to the core. Basically, a concept of only the strong surviving. And, of course, at the time, those who were the strongest were those who occupied the highest rungs of the socioeconomic ladder. But now you have a rationale for genocide and for militaristic campaigns abroad. And that's precisely what the East India Company was doing, particularly the British East India Company. At the time, what they were doing was they were training people at a college known as Haileybury College, and these people were being trained not just in the financial aspects of business, but also in military. And this is a special kind of military. They were being trained to act as kind of like a constabulary, corporate constables of sorts. And now today we have this same sort of setup with private security firms, which are patronized by multinational corporations. Mm-hmm. If you take, for instance, DynCorp and Blackwater USA, they are the latest incarnations in this kind of militant variety of mercantilism. Mm-hmm. They're basically following a prescription that the Illuminati founder Adam Weishaupt once wrote. He wrote, quote, "The great strength of our order lies in its concealment. Let it never appear in any place in its own name, but always covered by another name and another occupation." That's what groups like DynCorp and Blackwater are doing. They're following Weishaupt's prescription because they euphemistically refer to themselves as private security firms, but they're really mercenary groups that are engaged in several criminal activities. Look, for instance, at what DynCorp was doing over in Bosnia. This is well known now. This is common knowledge. Kelly O'Meara of Insight Magazine has reported about it, where they were basically involved in the sex slave trade over there, and you had DynCorp employees bragging about how they had sex slaves of various ages, mm-hmm. and various talents that they had purchased. And one former DynCorp employee, an aircraft mechanic named Ben Johnston, complained about this and was removed from DynCorp, and he had to be put in the protective custody of the Army Investigation Division until he could leave Kosovo and come back to the United States. An even more egregious example with Blackwater USA was that they had a contract to basically guard convoys carrying kitchen equipment to the U.S. military, and they took those contracts after they had been signed and removed the word armored from them so that the convoys did not have to be armored.
Wow.
And this basically probably led to the infamous deaths of four contractors in Fallujah going back to, I believe it was, 2004. Mm-hmm. If those convoys had been armored, they probably would have still been alive.
It's amazing. No, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, sorry.
It's just very noteworthy to peruse all this stuff in your article and see all the connectivity again. Because, as you had said about Blackwater and whatnot, I mean, these were the guys who were protecting the rich and the powerful's property after Katrina.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yes,
all the connections.
Blackwater's founder, Eric Prince,
has boasted about how it's how Blackwater is growing in size and scope to where it can literally become almost a surrogate army for the United States, which is quite a scary idea when you consider that it doesn't. Private security firms such as Blackwater don't fall under the oversight of any kind of congressional committee. This is what the elite do when there's something that they want to when there's some kind of criminal activity that they want to conduct, and they know that they can't do it through one of the branches of government because of governmental oversight committees. They'll turn and they'll look in another drawer and find a private group and will conduct the criminal activity through that group because it falls outside of the range of any kind of government watchdog group. Falls out of the range of any of what you might call GS-1811s, which are basically agents that conduct internal affair kind of investigations. Off the top of my head, AFOSI, DCIS, those kind of groups.
Yeah, it's really abysmal when you start looking at all these things and the way that they're doing this. I mean, if you think about it, that's almost exactly like Al-Qaeda, for example. You know, we say, oh, Al-Qaeda is a different kind of enemy because they don't have a country. They're not bound by the Geneva Conventions and this and this. And we look at it and we say, well, hold on a second here. Isn't that the exact same thing that you're talking about? When you want to find something and fund something outside the realm of government, you just make it into a company, a corporation. And, mm-hmm. Didn't we also see the same thing with the Total Information Awareness Project, where that started out as a DARPA program? It was either leaked intentionally or unintentionally to the media, but there was outrage, and then they said, well, we're not going to do this anymore, and then it went to the private industry side of things.
Yeah, it was defunded, and now it's being brought in through the back doors. Several of the original TIA programs are now just carrying on under different funding.
Exactly.
And,
so it's the same thing.
Same sort of thing.
It's amazing.
What's also interesting, though, is while here we have this very technocratic arrangement of things with the British East India Company, where they had their scientific theoreticians, their own epistemological cartel. At the same time, they still recognized the overall expedience of organized religion. At the time, the pluralistic secular state was gradually supplanting the traditional theocratic power structures, where the nobles, the ruling class, received their sanction to rule from the dominant ecclesiastical authorities of the time. But at the same time, organized religion had not outlived its usefulness to the power elite. And sadly enough, this led them to the East India Company to quickly co-opt one of the dominant theistic faiths of the time, and that was, of course, Christianity.
Of course.
Now, for those listeners out there, I want to throw in a little disclaimer. Anybody who reads the scriptures will know that Jesus was quite adamant about greed and the love of money being the root of all evil. So it took a great deal of balderization and distortion of the scriptures in order for the British East India Company to make this work. But what they did was they trained their own missionaries, and their missionaries through their own social Darwinian spin on the scriptures. So they managed to hijack the already corrupt Christian establishment, because at the time, of course, Jesus was not around to chase the money changers out of the temple, and there was already systemic corruption in the Christian establishment. There were already priests who were going some pretty questionable routes, attempting to use the scriptures to basically justify their own racist views, to justify their own self-interest. But the British East India Company basically trained their own missionaries and sent them out to convert, in question, again in quotes there, to convert peoples of the nation, the peoples of the countries that the British East India Company were looking to exploit, to convert them to their own variety of Christianity, which was a very distorted hierarchical model of theology, where it was God's divine will that they should come under the paternal care of the British Empire.
Yeah, Romans 13 sort of.
Exactly.
Invocation.
Exactly. Well, at any rate, the transnationalists of today are doing precisely the same thing. Now, the religious rationale for establishing proprietary colonies is being supplied by what's known as dominionism. Now, basically, dominionism is
Let me jump in here if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
We're coming up to a break here. It's very interesting that you head down this road, folks. And gosh, I can't tell you how grateful I am too. I've done about 4 or 5 hours in the last couple of weeks on dominionism and this push for a theocracy and names and different organizations behind the scenes making this happen. Stay with us, folks. Back in three.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
right, folks, tail end of hour number one already. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. We are very privileged tonight to have with us two brothers who have done an amazing amount of research and certainly have opened a lot of doors to understanding for a lot of us. Their book is entitled The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship. Please welcome back Philip and Paul Collins. Gentlemen, please continue and welcome.
Sure. Thank you, Frank. Thanks. Well, basically, dominionism is a new religio-political doctrine that has been gradually co-opting the modern Christian establishment. And it holds that Jesus, for whatever reasons, is either unwilling to or incapable of returning to earth until Christians basically carry out what is tantamount to a political coup. They basically have to establish a secular world kingdom maintained through secular power. And in essence, they make his kingdom come. He does not make his kingdom come himself. Mm-hmm. Well, this is vintage neo-Gnosticism or secular Gnosticism. Basically, this is what's known as immanentizing the eschaton. That is bringing the end of days, the eschaton, and reconceptualizing this transcendent object of faith as an object of immanent experience, bringing the eschaton, the end of days, to the ontological plane of the physical universe, bringing it about within human history itself, and not allowing the transcendent hand of God to do so, but instead the hand of man. And ironically, this was a practice of earlier sociopolitical utopians, specifically communist and fascist, who basically qualified as secular Gnostics, who, while they typically rejected the traditional Abrahamic faiths in favor of a radically secular worldview, they at the same time simultaneously transplanted the traditional metaphysical concepts of these faiths within the ontological plane of the physical universe. They took the eschaton, the end of days, and they reconceptualized that concept to mean what it was, to mean something different for them. For instance, for the communists, it meant the workers' paradise. For the fascists, particularly the Nazi, it meant the Aryan kingdom of the Third Reich. But again, it involved basically immanentizing transcendent objects of faith, and that's precisely what the dominionists have done. The dominionists have basically taken Ephesians 6:12, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, which basically makes it clear that Christians do not wrestle with flesh and blood, but instead wrestle with principalities, powers, and spiritual host of wickedness in heavenly places. Well, the dominionist basically turns Ephesians 6:12 on its head. Now the enemy is entirely flesh and blood, a corporeal adversary embodied by those who oppose dominionism's purely immanent heaven, the eschaton that they're trying to bring about here within the ontological plane of the physical universe.
Absolutely. Just a second, folks. We're back in 90 seconds. Stay with us.